I knew all my hardcore people would be here. Yeah. This is a... Well, I love y'all for sitting here and listening, because I know there's parts of your anatomy that's getting tired. Your mind's tired, and other parts of your body. Because this is... You have a hard job. So many people say it's nice of you to take your time and do all this. It's nice of y'all to sit and listen. That's a hard job. It really is. So I appreciate you being here. I always appreciate my hardcore group, and I'll try to be gentle. Okay? Okay. Step five that y'all had right after lunch, our principle there is integrity. Not that we needed to get that a little bit of that back and work on it for the rest of our lives. Having a basic integrity. We don't have to be, you know, little nail out of the woodshed and be so proper and so... We're not saints, as the book tells us. But to try to get some of this basic integrity. Keep our word when we possibly can. Even if it's over a small thing. I'll give you a call. Telling somebody, I'll give you a call. And then not ever calling. And I find, and I do not blame it on my age, I find that writing it down is the only way I'm going to be able to keep that part of my integrity in place. Call such and so. And even if I get the machine three or four times, I've still called. But getting that, working on the small integrity first, because we certainly didn't have it when we were drinking, did we? So that's the principle that we put into our lives when we do step five and work on for the rest of our lives. Okay, step six was willingness. The willingness, not only where the program is concerned, to do the things that they tell us to do, to be willing to try these things that they're suggesting in the steps, but the willingness as we go along in our sobriety to listen to other people. And that's why I was complimenting y'all. Just, it's a hard job to sit and listen to other people, especially if they're telling you something that you don't agree with, and they're trying to convince you that they're right. And it's hard to just stand there and keep your opinions to yourself. Because I don't like to give away too many of my opinions, because they come bouncing back and they were wrong to start with. So a lady passed, an old gal from Alabama, told me, she said, you know, Willie, and I don't think she's the first one that passed that on in world history, but she said, I've learned a little something, that when people are trying to convince me that they're right and I'm wrong, to just say, you know, I don't agree with what you say, but I'll think about it. Man, that keeps a lot of friends in your circle. Keeps a lot of people that, you know, if you stand there and keep arguing with them, you're gonna taint the relationship that you have. And what a waste, because sometimes one that you have is turning out to be very important to you. So just saying that very simple thing to them, you know, I don't agree with what you say, but I'm going to think about it. That helps me to cool off and not really, you know, not take for granted that I'm supposed to straighten them out on whatever we disagree about. Okay, step seven, humility. And that's not the dreaded word. As you go through step seven, you see that humility just means that I can step back and know that I'm not the most important person in this world, and that the world doesn't turn according to the way it should, as far as I'm concerned, all the time. But you know, it was here before I was. So I think it has a little seniority. So whatever the world is deciding to thrust upon all of us, one at a time, the program will be there for us if we just think to ourselves, okay, it didn't pick me out to happen to. That's humility. That's taking myself out of the center. My first beautiful sponsor in Alabama told me, said, you know, Willie, when I get to thinking I'm too important, I stick my hand in a bucket of water and pull it out and look at the hole you made. That's a good sign, as well as ordering somebody else's dog around. So both of those, like I say, I take the program very, very seriously. I just cannot take Willie very seriously. I can't get along like that. I did it first, and it was disaster. So I found out that all the little, you know, I think we have all the big senses, smell and touch and I see and all that. And then we have another sense, and that's a sense of humor. And God, it's good to get it back. Anybody that's heard my story tape knows that I had to get it back the hard way to survive in the very beginning. And I found out that a sense of humor was what did it. Not plotting and planning and conniving and deciding what my man was supposed to do, but to look at the situation and see how absurd it was. So if you ever get a hold of a story tape, you'll know that humility comes along with just removing the intensity of yourself and the importance in the scheme of things. Because I found out that if I dropped off the end of the world tomorrow, you know what the world's going to do? Boom, boom, boom. Same rate. It's not even going to slow down. That sort of hurts my feelings, but at least it could slow down a little bit. But humility is so, when we get it down to size, I thought it was going up on the mountaintop and putting on a hair shirt and, you know, sitting up there cross-legged for years and years. That was humility. But it isn't all that deep, I don't think. It's just going along and putting yourself in the proper place in the respect of things. Okay, step 8, we're going to have to, I don't like to hurry, but I'm going to have to hurry. That goes against my Texas blood. Made a list. Our principle there is brotherly love. And that means towards everybody, not just towards AAs. Be nice at a meeting to AA, you know, with everybody. People in your neighborhood, the girl at the grocery store, the man at the post office, even if he's 6 days late getting your mail put up. Just looking at people like they deserve a place in this world too. I found out that the most important thing you wear is the expression on your face. Because sometimes just the expression can help people, especially if you look at them and just say hi and smile. And in some cases, that can be dangerous these days. But I'm at the age where it's not dangerous anymore. Dadgummit. So I can do that. But sometimes it's a only smile they've seen that day. And it's no big deal. You go your way, they go that way. But the expression on your face is the most important thing you put on when you get up in the morning. As my beautiful Bahia out here tells you, I have mirrors all over my house. And it's not vanity, so that I can look at myself, you know, and see if my hair is all right. It's usually up there. But it's so that as I go from room to room, I see Willie. And if she's looking like a sour pickle, then I know that I got to straighten up before I get out and see anybody else or even make myself happy. I can sit there all by myself. I hadn't planned to be alone in the latter years of my life, but that's the way it's worked out. But I have a big window at the back where I can watch the birds and the squirrel and get the biggest kick out of them. The other day, a strange bird came up. It had an iridescent neck, and he was black as he could be. Wasn't a blackbird, because this neck was real. I don't know where he came from. But he would take the bread that I had put down for the blue jays, and he would pick it up and take it over to where I leave the water underneath the diving board. And he would take it over, and it was too hard. It had been there for quite a while, and the sun had sort of baked it. And it was too hard, so he'd take it over and dip it in the water. Then he'd eat it. You know, like a raccoon. He's going to wash up everything. But he'd come back and get another piece of bread. I wish you'd have been there, Bahia. It was a sight. Because we sit and watch the birds and don't even talk to each other a lot of times. We're just amused at their antics. You know, and this is, it's really turning outward towards your fellow man. Have some fun with them. Maybe it's the only fun they're going to have all day, because people have problems besides us. People that aren't even in this program. And I can reach out and just for a few minutes, give them something that maybe they hadn't had all day, and it's not a big thing. But the brotherly love will help you. That's what I found out. Helps me more than it helps them. And doesn't cost me a cent. Not a cent. Okay, we make a list of all the persons that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So this is where we turn outward. Step 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backwards and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage that we have done. And third, having thus cleared away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being that we know. Now see, that sort of confuses you when you first start, because my fist got balled up like this when I first read this, and I was sitting there with Rose there in Alabama, and I could feel myself clenching my fist. I don't know whether I can do this or not. But see, the step says all I'm supposed to do is make a list. But I'm already mad about, trying to repair relationships. And I'm not even ready to repair them. I'm making a list of all of these people that need some repair on my part. So we go on, and it says this is a very large order. It's a task which we may perform with increasing skill, but never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace and partnership and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. And those of you who know me know that that's one of my favorite words, adventure. It's always a promise, because I'm up for anything new. That's, as I said this morning, not illegal, immoral, or fattening. If I can clear it through those three things. Except now I'm trying to keep on weight. As you get older, you get that problem. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in the new adventure of living. What a promise. Until he first backtracks and really makes an accurate and unsparing list, survey of the human wreckage that he has left in his wake. To a degree, he's already done this when taking moral inventory. But now the time has come when he ought to redouble his efforts to see how many people he has hurt and in what ways. That's what's important. That's what's important. What ways, so that I will not hold on to those ways when I'm sober and keep doing it, keep hurting people. Because as I said the other day, as drunks we have the ability to kill people that don't even drink. We have that ability. And I have the ability to hurt people so sober that it's pitiful. I have to remember that, because that's what it says right here, as my Latin kids in my schoolrooms used to say. It says this, Ms. Bingham, and I like the way they said it, so I never did correct them. This opening of emotional wounds, and sometime old, and some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. But if you have... it's hard up here. Okay. Like I say, I don't hurry very well. But if a willing start is made, then the great advantage of doing this will so quickly reveal itself that the pain will be lessened as one obstacle after another melts away. These obstacles, however, are very real. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted and broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. That's human nature. To escape looking at the wrongs that we have done one another, we resentfully focus on the wrongs that he has done us. And this is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our own. And even up to that point, I would say to Rose, I can't do this. I'm not ready to do this, Rose. I'm just not ready to do it. She'd look at me with those steel blue eyes and say, "Willie," which took about 15 minutes, "Willie, all we're doing now is making a list. We're really not doing anything yet." Okay, at the bottom of the page, when listing, now we're getting the people we had harmed, most of us hit another solid obstacle. We got a pretty severe shock when we realized that we were preparing to make a face-to-face admission of our wretched conduct to those we had hurt. It had been embarrassing enough when in confidence we had admitted these things to God and to ourselves and to another human being. But the prospect of actually visiting or even writing the people concerned now overwhelmed us, especially when we remembered in what poor favor we stood with most of them. There are cases, too, where we have damaged others who are still happily unaware of being hurt. Why we cried, "Shouldn't bygones be bygones?" That makes sense. If they didn't know that we were the culprit in the whole thing, why should we tell them now? We should because it's good for us. Remember, go to any length to get it. Why do we have to think of these people at all? These are some ways in which fear conspired with pride to hinder our making a list of all the people we had harmed. Just making the list. Okay, down at the bottom of the page, lots of good stuff in between, but at the bottom of the page it says, though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all, and in some cases action ought to be deferred, We should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhausting survey of our past life as it has affected other people. How are we going to find out what our faults are and what we don't want to carry over into our sobriety? Criticism and judgment and critiquing everything and always knowing we're right. Because this is some of the ways that we hurt people. By really telling them their opinion isn't worth a squat. And that, you know, I don't have any right to do that, because how do I know whether mine's worth a squat or not? In many instances, we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm that we had done ourselves has. We pick up these habits and we carry them, and we're hurting ourselves. Very deep and sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions a violent twist, which have since discolored our relationship and altered our lives for the worse. I don't want that anymore. I don't want that anymore. I don't want to do stuff that's going to make my attitude so bad that I'm going to make myself miserable. I'll wait for other people to try to do that. Just, you know, start to threaten them. Try if you can. But I don't want to do it to myself anymore. I don't want to have that guilt gnawing and I shouldn't have done that gnawing. I'd much rather say I'm glad I did that when I don't want to wait for somebody. While the purpose of making restitution to others is paramount, it is equally necessary that we extricate from our examination of our personal relations every bit of information about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties that we can. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. Calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight. We can go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us to see those faults that were basic, flaws which sometime were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. Thoroughness, we have found, will pay, and pay handsomely. We might next ask our question ourselves what we mean when we say that we have harmed other people. I think this part of the 12 and 12 is so good. It said, what kind of harm do one another anyway? To define the word harm in a practical way, we might call it the results of instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger in others. If we lie or we cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but of their emotional security and their peace of mind. I've often said, and many of you have heard me say, I don't know why my man didn't drive one of those airplanes straight into the ground. He would leave home and not know what was going, whether the quarters would be there when he got back, whether they'd be burned to the ground. He didn't know whether I'd be in unknown places where he'd have to find me. I had no right to rob this man of his peace of mind. That isn't the right of one human being to another. So when I'm talking about, when we talk about harms, we have to get down to this type of thinking. That I didn't have the right then, and I certainly don't have it now. I don't have the right to rob my son of his peaceful mind. He's up in the hill country, I'm down in South Texas. And we only have each other left now. My family's gone, and he has just me. He has no brothers or sisters. So we have each other. And I don't have the right. Sometime, maybe I have a few aches and pains, which to me, they're just ordinary. When I don't have them, I really do celebrate. But I don't have the right to... He can't do a thing about my aches and pains. Not one thing. He can't... You know, he's not a doctor. He's a banker. And he's not a doctor, so he can't give me any medical advice. Why should I bother him? Because it worries him. I'm down there by myself in that house. And he's way up there. So that's just a little thing now. But I had to see that I had robbed my husband of his peace of mind, so that I have to be careful about robbing anybody else's. I don't even like, you know, I have a beautiful little gal here named Cindy, and she worries about me being there by myself all the time. And I try not to tell her if anything untowards has happened around me, so that she won't worry about it, because she worries about me enough. And I'm glad she does, but I don't want to give her any further excuse. But the idea is to get down to just how, and the big book lays it out for us, to get down, you know, to where were we responsible for some of these bad relationships. Sometime we can't even remember that we got it started in the first place. That we gave a short answer, or we wouldn't listen to somebody and hurt their feelings. I don't have a right to do that. People sometimes say, well, if they get hurt feelings, that's their problem. No, I can't think that way, because I don't believe the program tells me to. It's their problem, all right, but I don't have to treat it that lightly. I have to remember that, Willie, you shouldn't have said that to start with. And then it wouldn't be any debate about whether their feelings are hurt or whether they should have him hurt or not have him hurt. There won't be any more naggy little stuff. I got enough stuff up here. But we really issue, down at the bottom of the page, I told y'all to leave, put your finger down there. We really issue them an invitation to become contemptuous and vengeful when we do rob them. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy and misery and a strong desire to retaliate in kind. Such gross misbehavior is not by any means a full catalog of the harm that we do. Let's think of some of the subtler, there's our word subtle again, ones which can sometimes be quite as damaging. Suppose that in our family lives we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, or cold. And we know how to do that, don't we, gals? You know, don't you? You know this old silent treatment that can go on for 4 or 5 days. And you men can do it, but not nearly as good. You can't do it. Suppose that we're irritable and critical and impatient and humorless. Oh, Lord. Living with someone that doesn't have a smidgen of sense of humor would drive me bananas. Suppose we lavish attention upon one member of the family and neglect the others. What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, either by a rule of iron or by a constant outpouring of minute directions for just how their lives should be lived from hour to hour? What happens when we wallow in depression? And that's what we do in depression. I'm not talking about clinical depression. I'm talking about this word that's being bandied around so much, I'm depressed. When one of my girls call me and tell me, I'm depressed. Lord, it makes me depressed too, just hearing it. When we wallow in depression, that's what they're talking about. Self-pity oozing from every pore, and inflict that upon those about us. Such a roster of harms done others, the kind that make daily living with us as practicing alcoholics difficult and often unbearable. They can be just as difficult and unbearing sober. Could we could be extended almost indefinitely. I'm doing the best I can. When we take such personal traits as these into the shop, I've been around Billy too much this week, and I'm talking like a New Yorker. Here we go. And the society of our fellows, they can do damage almost as extensive as that which we cause at home. Okay. I have a whole nother step to cover, but that's all right. I can't get it all in. That step eight ends on page 82. Why am I letting these men order me around? That last paragraph in that on that page says, whenever our pencil falters, we can fortify and cheer ourselves by remembering what AA experience, not statistics or anybody keep it, but the experience in this step has meant to others. It is the beginning of the end of our isolation from our fellows and from God. Every person we're nice to, we're saying, you know, God, this is your child too. Just make the list, as it says in that. And try to put in every little nuance that you can about yourself that you think you don't want to be like that anymore. It's caused you trouble all of your life, even before you're drinking. Maybe it was a bad habit. Because as human beings, we pick up bad habits. But talking about hurting people, this little story that came from the grapevine a long time ago, I want to pass on as another angle, not a different angle, but just, there was a little boy with a bad temper, and his father gave him a bag of nails and told him that every time he lost his temper, to hammer a nail in that back fence. The first day the boy had driven 6 nails into the fence. Then it had gradually dwindled down. He discovered it was easier to hold his temper than to go out and drive those nails into the fence. And finally the day came when the boy didn't lose his temper at all. He told his father about it, and the father suggested that the boy now pull out one nail for each day that he had been able to hold his temper. The days passed, and the young boy was finally able to tell his father that all the nails were gone. The father took his son by the hand and led him to the fence. And he said, "You've done well, my son, but let's look at the holes in the fence. This fence will never be the same. When you say things in anger, they leave a scar just like this one. You can put a knife into a man and draw it out. It won't matter how many times you say you're sorry. The wound is still there. A verbal wound is as bad as a physical one." And I have to remember that this applies many times to friends. Friends are very rare jewels. Indeed, they make you smile and encourage you to succeed. They lend an ear. They share a word of praise, and they always want to open their hearts to us. So we need to show our friends how important they are. and to tenderly care for them. All right, we'll get into step 9. Made direct amends, but our men have gone through the big book directions, and these are no different. It's just the emphasis that we put on. A principle here is judgment. None of us had lost that when we were drinking, did we? Oh, yeah, let's fly to Miami, and then we'll fly down to Mexico. That's a good idea. Let's go. We don't have but 20 bucks in our pocket, but let's go. Yeah, our judgment needs a little bit of repair. And we can start here and then be careful about our judgment. Take our time so we don't jump into any situation, small or large. Because we invariably, the first thing in our brain is, let's do it. If it sounds good, do it. But when we get through with whatever we've done it, we have a price to pay. I want my judgment to be good for me and for everybody around me. Not only take, you know, what I want to do, but take into consideration how it will affect those that are around me. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. First line, good judgment, a careful sense of timing, and courage, prudence. Careful, careful, careful. These are the qualities that we shall need when we take step 9. After we have made the list of people we had harmed, reflected over it carefully upon each instance, and have tried to possess ourselves of the right attitude in which to proceed, we will see that the making of direct amends divide those we should approach into several classes. And Joe and Charlie have gone through those. And we put these people there so that we can use the judgment of the best time for ourselves and for them, but mainly for them, to be sure we know what we're doing when we do, because we can go back and harm people that are blissfully unaware that they've been harmed. And it will cause them pain that we necessarily don't have to inflict on them. There will be those who ought to be dealt with just as soon as we become reasonably confident that we can maintain our sobriety. There's a little clause there, until we can be pretty sure that we can go a little bit further. There will be those to whom we can make only partial restitution, lest complete disclosure do them or others more harm than good. There will be other cases where action ought to be deferred, and still others in which, by the very nature of the situation, we shall never be able to make direct contact at all. And all of those make sense when you get to thinking about it. It's good that our founders really took into consideration human nature. We just want to jump in and make it right with everybody. Just let's get this over with. And sometimes it turns out to be that simple. But if we go ahead and sort of make this division of, now who ought we to tend to first? With me, it was my man. Because we were thousands and thousands of miles away from people. We were living in a drinking world. So, because Air Force people, service people, you men drink a little bit when you're in the service. And we did. So it wasn't so out of the ordinary to embarrass yourself or do something dumb when you're over at the club or at somebody's house or something. And it was easy to say, you know, everybody was doing it. Everybody was living that same crazy life. This isn't an excuse. I found out that I needed, for my sake, to divide these people, and careful with the judgment and the careful sense of timing and a lot of courage, go ahead and do it so I could find out about Willie. The main thing about the amends step is that I have to learn from the amends that I have to make or that I fake to people how not to make any more lists and not to have to think about making any. This is a sure cure for having to go back and keep making amends, making amends. I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. It was hard enough to do it here. And I take the warning that they have. You know, if we keep on doing what we have been doing, then we'll always result in what we always have gotten out of it. And that's not good enough. As I told y'all in the very beginning, I'm not willing to settle for half. I want that glass full. I did carry that over from my drinking. I want it full to start with, and I want it empty. But I want that glass full as much as I can have it. And just sometime the simple thing that I learned about myself was to taste my words before I spit them out. Just sort of roll them around in my mouth a little bit before I... That helps me not to pile up any more amends that have to be made and any more less that I have to accumulate. None of us are going to be scot-free because we're ordinary human beings. But at least I've learned to sort of roll them around first and see how they taste to me. And if they don't taste very good, if they don't feel very good, I know my dad used to always say, "Honey, don't ever pass up a chance to shut up." He wasn't a psychiatrist, never did finish the 10th grade, but, you know, he had a lot of wisdom. Just don't ever take that chance, miss it, to just shut up. Am I through? 5 whole minutes. Okay. This is sort of a purifying step. It gets rid of a lot of the, you know, we... talked about directly going to talk to people, but when we get through with this step, and we're never really completely through because there were so many things that I remembered after I did my original, I just got out my paper and added other people to it. Many instances where I had not put their names down because they were serving in North Africa. They were overseas. I'd never see them again. We were in different units by then and never see them. So it never even, you know, I took advantage of the fact that I never see them. It tells me not to do that, and I knew better. But the thing of it is, I found out that the little that I did get done in the beginning, and I hadn't hurt a lot of people, because like I say, I was away from most of the people that really loved me, my family, friends that I grew up with, that I'd gone to school with. I didn't do any drinking back there, but I hurt them by just simply dropping them. They never heard from me. They'd see my mom and dad, and they'd say, "Well, where is Willie now?" They had no, and you know, I could have dropped them postcards. We'd been friends all of our lives, and we lived in that little bitty community, so we were close. We all went to the same church. We all went to the same school. And like I say, when you graduate in a class of 7 people, you get pretty close all the way through school. So I didn't even, you know, I could have sat down and said, we're stationed in Omaha now. We're stationed in Rantoul, Illinois. We've stationed in Seattle, Washington. Wherever we happen to be, I could have dropped those that I was the closest to. But to be ignored, you hurt people. And they wondered why I never got in touch with them. Didn't even bother to send them a Christmas card. I was busy. I was busy being an Air Force wife, you know, busy and important. They were back home farming. And see, that wasn't my conscious attitude. But why else didn't I take the time? Nourishing a friendship, the time we take is so good. Because it comes back. It comes back. Okay. On these 2 steps, it's a matter of attitude. That's what we're working on, is an attitude that we can carry and make us content, at least content. Happy, I don't strive for. Happy is a word. But contentment, just having that bedrock contentment, even when we have a Texas tornado. I jumped in that bathroom tub in 83, and many of you remember because I came on to our first seminar that we had here, but the tornado had just torn my house all to pieces. But at least, see, I jumped in that bathtub with my little dog, and we rode out that, and the rest of the house was, you know, looked like a bomb had hit it, but it didn't bother that bathtub. And I wasn't really afraid, talked to the little dog, and she started to talk back to me because she didn't know what we were doing in the bathtub. But I realized after it was all over with, yeah, I was scared. I was scared. But I was also just waiting for it to get over with so I could get out and see the damage. And then I couldn't get out because there were electrical wires all over. And nobody could get to me. That was fun. But the thing of it is, that basic contentment that everything was going to be all right. It's going to be over in a little while. And that's when I realized my attitude towards life. See, that tornado didn't take an exit from Florida and come down and hit us on purpose. It didn't do it. It was just there, and we have them all the time. That's the only one that I've gotten a direct hit out of. But it changed my attitude about, why did this happen to me? We're so quick to say, why did this happen to me? And when something good happens, we very seldom think, God, why did this happen to me? Why was I the one that was singled out? But we're very quick on the opposite side. Why did you let this happen to me? It's changing attitude. This I'll leave you with, and I will leave. And I will. When you change your thinking, you change your beliefs. When you change your beliefs, you change your expectations. When you change your expectations, you change your attitude. When you change your attitude, you change your behavior. When you change your behavior, you change your performance. And when you change your performance, you change your life. I'll see y'all in the morning early. Did I do it?